The Lung Cancer Alliance New York, in partnership with the Albany Medical Center, sponsoring a Shine a Light on Lung Cancer vigil on Tuesday, November 13th at 6 o'clock. The purpose of the vigil is to share compassion and hope and raise public awareness. The Lung Cancer Alliance is the only national nonprofit dedicated to providing support and advocacy for those living with or at risk for lung cancer and are committed to reversing decades of stigma and neglect by empowering those with or at risk for lung cancer, elevating awareness, and changing health policy. Lung cancer is the leading cause of all cancer deaths. It is second only to heart disease as the leading disease killer. Joining us this morning, we welcome Phyllis Goldstein, a 9-year-long lung cancer survivor. Betsy McPhail is here. Her sister was diagnosed at the age of 24 and passed away at the age of 25. And Dr. Mark Napier is here, the medical director of the multi-specialty lung cancer program. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Very nice having you all here. Give us a sense, Mark, of the when we talk about lung cancer overall. I mentioned in the introduction about these reversing the decades of stigma and neglect by empowering those with or at risk for lung cancer. What's the stigma?
Well, I think a lot of people blame lung cancer patients for their disease because most of lung cancer patients are smokers, about 85%. And I think it's a terrible stigma. I think the people that hold the blame for lung cancer are really the tobacco companies and the tobacco industry. Also, 15% of our lung cancer patients are never smokers. Certainly they can't be held accountable for this terrible disease. It's a national epidemic. Claims about 160,000 lives a year, and the bulk of those are preventable deaths if we didn't have the tobacco problem that we have in this country.
When we use that term never smoker, that's obvious that people who have never smoked that have contracted the disease.
Right.
And both of our guests, both Betsy's sister as well as Phyllis, never smokers, right?
Correct.
So, Phyllis, what was it like for you to get that diagnosis and think to yourself, well, I never smoked. How would I get that?
You know, it was such a shock. Unbelievable. And it was something that I wasn't angry, but I was like, what is going on? Is there something wrong with the air we breathe? Because my best friend had fallen off her patio and went to the emergency room. And when they took an x-ray of her arm, which she broke, near her shoulder, they saw a spot on her lung. She was diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer, and she was a never smoker. And she lived one block from where I live. And we walked every single morning for 35 years. And 6 months after her diagnosis, I had a cough. A cold, actually. And when it went away, I had a cough. And my husband said, go to the doctor. Look what happened to Susan. I said, you're overreacting. Well, I finally gave in and I went. And I was diagnosed with stage 3A lung cancer. I was shocked. And I was lucky, though, because stage 3A is operable and hers wasn't. Mm. And she died 2 years later. So I am a rare person, I tell people, because I survived, and only 15% of us survive 5 years or more, whereas breast cancer survivors survive past 5 years or more. 89% of them do.
And as I mentioned in the introduction, it's been 9 years since you were diagnosed. Why is that, Doctor, the rarity of that?
The rarity of?
Well, meaning that if once you are diagnosed, that people only last 5 years.
Well, most lung cancer is diagnosed at an advanced stage. So about 80% of our lung cancer is diagnosed stage 3 or higher. And most of those patients aren't surgical candidates. Lung cancer begins silently and grows silently. So it's not until it becomes more advanced and causes symptoms that we usually detect it. Though we're starting to make some inroads on that with lung cancer screening, which is the new sort of revolutionary moment in lung cancer care.
So, Phyllis, you were operated on then?
Yes.
And that was, at what point did you think, okay, well, this will be better, and I'm hopeful?
Well, I have to tell you that once you have a primary lung cancer, you are at high risk for a second primary lung cancer, and I need to be screened every year by low-dose CT scans to make sure I catch it early if I get another primary.
So even 9 years later, you're still, it's something that's a cloud over you, I assume.
Yes.
Let us welcome Betsy McPhail to the program. She is, her sister was diagnosed at the age of 24 and died a year later.
Yes.
Again, a non-smoker.
Correct.
And for someone so young?
She had a genetic mutation that caused her lung cancer. And unfortunately, it seems to be becoming more and more common, especially for young women. And like Dr. Napier was saying, she didn't have any signs, any symptoms until she reached stage four. She was operated on, but unfortunately it already gotten to an advanced stage and it was too late.
At what point, how was it diagnosed? Was it?
She had a cough. Okay. She was training for a half marathon and she began to have trouble breathing. So she had a cough. She went to the doctor. They misdiagnosed her over several months. And finally they biopsied her tumor and found it was cancerous. But even at that point, they didn't think it was lung cancer and they didn't think it had spread. They thought she'd have the operation and it would be done with.
When you look at, and Dr. August, I'll ask you this question, as far as Betsy goes, given her sister's history, then how important is it for Betsy to be regularly checked?
That's a very good question. This is an evolving area. There is a recognition that lung cancer can have a genetic risk associated with it. So having a first-degree relative, a sibling, a parent, or children with lung cancer increases your risk. We still know the most powerful risk for lung cancer is smoking, and we are only screening high-risk patients right now. So we don't really have screening protocols for people who have family members. But it's taken on a case-by-case basis in conjunction with a genetic counselor, trying to make decisions with each person about whether they should be screened. Right now, screening for lung cancer is done with CAT scans. Mm-hmm. And even though they're low dose, it's still radiation exposure. So we have to balance the risks of radiation with the benefits of screening. So we're still only recommending screening for high-risk patients who are heavy smokers. But presumably in the future, we'll have more information about the genetics of lung cancer, and we may broaden the groups that we're screening.
What's a genetic counselor?
A genetic counselor is somebody who specializes in the genetic mutations and genetic risks that people carry from their own genetic profile, and they guide people in the workup, management, and screening of various genetic abnormalities.
Mm-hmm.
Because simply having a genetic mutation doesn't mean you'll develop the disease associated with that in all cases. So it's a complicated issue with what genetic risks come with what genetic mutations.
You spoke earlier about the revolutionary aspect of the screening process. What does that now allow you to do specifically?
So there was a trial called the National Lung Screening Trial, which was published. The results were published last year, which looked at screening patients at high risk for lung cancer. And they looked at patients age 55 to 74 who had smoked more than a pack a day for 30 years. And they screened them with either a low-dose CAT scan of the chest or an annual chest X-ray. And what they found is the patients who got the low-dose CAT scan of the chest had a relative 20% reduction in lung cancer death. Compared to the chest X-ray. And there was another trial looking at chest X-ray screening versus no screening at all, and it was found that chest X-rays were not beneficial. So what we've learned from these two trials is that people who are at high risk for lung cancer, who get a low-dose CAT scan of the chest on an annual basis in a multidisciplinary setting, so that's a program that includes pulmonologists, advanced thoracic surgeons, medical oncologists, radiation oncologists, pathologists, and radiologists, that we can reduce their risk of dying of lung cancer by 20%. And we have not really made inroads in the mortality rate from lung cancer in the past, and this is finally giving us an opportunity to start making a dent in those terrible statistics that we lose 85% of our lung cancer patients within 5 years.
85%.
That's why we need research for lung cancer. There's so many unknowns about it. And we need to have a vaccination, a blood test, a urine test, a breath test, a sputum test. I mean, something that is easily accessible to all, and that's cheap. And we don't have that. I know people are out there trying to work on it, but the funding for lung cancer research is the least major funded cancer among from the federal government. You know, the federal government sponsors breast cancer research, prostate, colon, and very little of it goes to lung cancer.
Again, because I guess the thought process being, well, if people didn't smoke, it wouldn't be an issue. When you look at the, because it seems to me, it just as it is for the two of you in your case of having never smoked and then coming down with in the cancer for you and for your sister, is just a as rare as it would
no,
be.
No, it isn't rare. I went to tell you that 25,000 women this year. Never smokers will be diagnosed with lung cancer, and it's the fastest growing cancer diagnosis.
So it's growing?
Yes, in never smoking women.
Well, and what I was going to say is that because you also hear the opposite, which also seems to be the abnormality, where someone has smoked for their entire life, a pack or two a day for 30, 40 years, and you know, die of a heart attack at 97. So, but that's an abnormality too, I would assume.
1 in 10 people who smoke get lung cancer. Not everyone who smokes get it.
1 in 10. Mm-hmm.
Some people can get away with smoking with regards to emphysema or heart disease or lung cancer, but there are most people can't. Most people are going to get some tobacco-related disease who are heavy smokers. And I think anytime you talk about lung cancer, we have to talk about the importance of people stopping smoking. And anti-tobacco efforts, because a lot of the disease associated with tobacco is preventable if people didn't smoke. But because cigarettes are so addictive, that you really have to focus not on the individual solely, but also on the tobacco industry as a whole and the tobacco epidemic that we have as a whole.
And also, I'd like to point out, you can't tell people who already quit smoking to quit. And 80% of newly diagnosed cases are in former smokers and never smokers.
Talk about the vigil for a moment of exactly what will be happening on Tuesday night.
Well, we're going to have Dr. Thomas Fabian, who was chief thoracic oncologist at Albany Medical Center, with whom we are in partnership with, speak about what the early low-dose CT screening guidelines mean for lung cancer patients, because these guidelines are newly published since the lung cancer screening trial that Dr. Napier spoke about. And Betsy is going to be talking about her sister and what happened to her. And we're going to have a vigil, a tribute, where we're going to have glow sticks lit and a rolling slideshow of people who passed or have lung or who are survivors. And we invite people to register at www.albanyvigil.kintera.org. Kintera is spelled K-I-N-T-E-R-A.
And it's albanyvigil.kintera.org. You can also find out more information by going to lungcanceralliance.org. The event takes place November 13th at 6 o'clock at the Hilton Garden Inn, which is right across from the Albany Medical Center. Dr. Mark Napier, Betsy McPhail, and Phyllis Goldstein, I thank you very much for sharing with us this morning. I appreciate it.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.